Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
It's Bill and Dan back in the studio today, and we'd love for you to join in. I mean, it's fun weekend because, you know, it's one where you just sit back and watch other teams, and we'll see, you know, what, if any, upsets there are, and I'm sure there will be this weekend. I mean, there has been every weekend. Remember last weekend was
we both like LSU.
I really do.
Yeah, and that would be an upset, I believe.
Yes, it would. Yeah, but they're 3.5, 4-point underdogs.
Yeah, I mean, that's we mentioned yesterday. I think we talked about it with Pascal a little bit. There are a couple teams in college football who lost week one, and they've been a little bit out of sight, out of mind compared to everybody else. LSU and Clemson are the teams that come to mind where it's like they lost week one to quality opponents. Although I mean, USC's facing down loss number three.
We'll find out how quality USC is.
Right, and if as Pascal mentioned, if that turns into a, you know, if that's a 6-6 or 7-5 season for USC, and LSU is in a beauty pageant for a playoff spot, the fact that USC isn't better could be detrimental to LSU's cause. It could look like a bad loss by the end of the season.
But if they beat Ole Miss, then that's really not good news for the Rebels, who would then have losses to Kentucky and this LSU team that we were just talking about. You don't know how good that loss is.
Yeah, but if they beat Ole Miss, that's not good news for the whole rest of the league, because it tells you LSU's probably got a pretty good team that's gotten better every week. And Brian Kelly is somebody who, I mean, it's generally speaking, that guy wins, right? I mean, that's been the story of most of the seasons he's coached college football. So I would think, the way we've talked about it this week, it's an elimination game, and it's a really, I mean, this is
it
one.
Feels like one,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, we got a couple elimination games this weekend in different sports. But this one feels like early on a pretty deep hole for the loser if they want to get to the college football playoff.
Yeah, I just have a tough time going against teams that I think are quality teams at home who are getting points.
And that's
sort of the way I feel about LSU. It's sort of the way I feel about Oregon.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, Ohio State has been the if you're not picking an SEC team, Ohio State has been the clear-cut favorite in college football this year, and
they have not left home until this weekend.
No, and that's a long trip. That's a discombobulating trip. We've seen a couple teams not play their best football after making that trip multiple time zones one way or the other. So no, I think that's a test to see early on if Ohio State is as advertised. If they go in there and it's not very competitive, then Ohio State is every bit the contender people say they are. Maybe Oregon is a little better than people realize, and they could prove it by beating Ohio State in an early matchup.
I just got a reminder. This is pretty funny. It's like you think they would know. I got a reminder for my tickets tonight to the Peace Out Farewell Tour.
Oh, was that
with Aerosmith? That was supposed to be tonight.
So Bill was going to see.
Yeah. Had never seen Aerosmith.
For newer listeners, yeah. Bill's on a concert world tour post-retirement from the university earlier this year. And he was going to see, for the first time ever, right? You were going to get to see Aerosmith. Yeah. A legendary live act.
I mean, it was pretty. I mean, pretty good show. It's like a Black Crowes opening for them,
who were also famously a great live band.
Yeah. I mean, so I've got my reminder from from State Farm Arena. It's like, sorry, I've already gotten refunded for that. I mean, I would have loved to have seen it. We're going to be back at State. We will be at State Farm tomorrow, though, because it's a yellow tomorrow night.
Oh, that's right. This was the
that's right. The bye weekend.
Oh, that's a good, yeah, that's a was, cool. Was, you know what? You're getting a great show tomorrow night.
Oh, I know we will.
I know someone who saw.
We saw them.
What did you see? What,
4 years ago.
Was
it
the stadium? Was that the stadium show? Was that the was he no, was he doing?
No, we saw them. We saw them in Atlanta at I think it was at Phillips is where we saw them. A few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago.
So a couple of years ago. And by the way,
they did a stadium tour after that.
This is what the show is going to be like because we're doing a show on bye week Friday.
That is
right. By the way, but this is – so Jeff Lynn, there was a tour a couple of years ago where the only American date was Los Angeles with the Hollywood Bowl.
Right. Yeah, that's I know, right. And I got the I have the video of that. What
I know
a great show.
So I know a couple of people who went to the Hollywood Bowl show, and I think that's what they've been sort of drawing on with Over and Out. Is that what the
yeah? This that's is what the, this one is.
So you're seeing Over and Out tomorrow. Yep. Yeah. Oh man, that yeah. You're in for. Are you a fan generally of his?
Oh, I always have been. Cool. Yes. Yeah. Really, really like it. I mean, I like all the stuff he produced. I mean, when he got with the Wilburys and producing stuff for Roy Orbison and for George Harrison.
His work with the Wilburys, which is a shared passion of ours. All those all those different traveling Wilburys. I'm going for sort of a Kris Kristofferson. I know he wasn't a Wilbur. I know he was a
Highwayman.
He was a highwayman, but no, that's sort of yeah. So Jeff Lynne's work with the Wilburys impressed George Harrison so much that in the mid '90s, when they needed a producer to do the Lost Beatles song "Free as a Bird,"
right.
Remember when they put that together? I guess Jeff Lynne is the outside producer they brought in to sync the John Lennon track with the rest of the, because I guess they did some new music for Free as a Bird and they did some, and
they used sort of that as a bridge and then wrote some other stuff.
Yeah.
There,
and so I guess Jeff Lynne has a producer credit on Free as a Bird because he did such a good job with the, I mean, yeah, just an incredible, I mean, a crazy, talented and it's a wild career that he's had. And yeah, I'm sure these shows are going to be really memorable.
Yeah, so that's what we've got tomorrow night. Anyway, I was just chuckling though when I saw the little reminder there. But we'd love to hear from you here on the Friday edition of The Drive. You can call us on The Drive hotline. That number 334-321-1390, and it is sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you get your favorite podcasts.
Again, anything on your mind? Got high school football tonight on both Wings and AU100.
I recorded a long basketball podcast with Justin Ferguson yesterday after we got finished up with the Drive, and it's crazy to think media days next week.
Yeah, and then tip off at Toomers next Thursday.
Tip off at Toomers, and I will have. I think we're waiting for like T's crossed and I's dotted and things like that, but I can say with confidence we're gonna be somewhere downtown for tip off at Toomers on Thursday to do the show. So we will be on location.
Yeah, we'll let you know so you can come join us.
Yeah, sounds like it's going to be a week-long, you know, it's going to be a day-long party. Live music is getting started as soon as our show gets going at 4. So it could be a little music in the background as we do our thing depending on where we are, but yeah, looking forward to that. And then just in a couple of weeks, you've got the exhibition.
Yeah, the Florida Atlantic,
the FAU exhibition, and the Vermont game to open things up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just about here, and really looking forward to it. I can't wait to see. I mean, I've just seen a little bit of one practice is all that I've seen. So looking forward to seeing how the new guys blend in. It's crazy to think. All right, this is a team that returns probably as many minutes as just about anybody. But then they've got five newcomers who I wouldn't be surprised to see any of those five, play significant minutes.
The 40 minutes that Auburn is going to get at the point at, you know, between JP and Denver and Tahad, and I don't know how that pie is divvied up, but the 40 minutes there, I'm really curious to see how it looks compared to Auburn's production at the point guard position last year and what Auburn got per 40 minutes out of Aiden and Trey. So this is, you know, and I don't know if it's I mean, look, J.P. Pegues started every game for the last 2 years at Furman before coming to Auburn. He was considered a top 20 player in the transfer portal when Auburn landed him.
How many minutes did he play? I'm sure he played 30.
I think it's right around. Yeah, I can give you the exact J.P. Pegues figures, but you know, the stat that I got, I think I butchered it on the show yesterday. I eventually looked it up on the Observer. J.P. Pegues, if you want, you know, if there were times last year, Bill, when I feel like teams were willing to let the Auburn point guard take the shot compared to the other options on the floor, and they were sort of defending accordingly. I don't think teams are going to want to do that too much. I mean, the way Denver heated up at the end of the season, I think leaving Denver space to shoot, that's one of the reasons that Bruce is intrigued by the possibility of playing Denver more at the point. It's not just that he did it well, and it's something that he has worked on since arriving at Auburn, but it's also that if teams try to leave Denver open because he's the point guard and they're focusing on other things the Auburn offense is doing, Denver Jones will take that shot and hit it at a pretty good rate.
Oh yeah, no kidding. He's very comfortable from there. I mean, we saw the video last year of him just shooting unbelievably from three. If he gets comfortable out there, it's hard. Yeah, I don't imagine there'll be many teams that will want to give him back away from him if he's running the point.
All right, J.P. Pegues last season at Furman, 30 starts, 34 minutes a game.
34 minutes. Okay, I was sure that it was over 30.
He averaged, it's about, if you round, he was 6 of 14, 42% from the field, 36% from three. The stat that amazed me, Bill, is that he averaged an attempted three about every 4 minutes he was out there. So he's somebody. J.P. Pegues, yeah, was shooting. I mean, he, I think last season he attempted nearly eight threes a game for Furman. So this is somebody who had a green light and was really confident in his shot. And at 35-36%, I think Bruce Pearl would be.
Oh yeah, he'd take it.
Yeah, he would take it. He would take a point guard who's confident in his own shot and willing to shoot with space. That hits it that number, and work the offense around that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that how the one and the four turn out. I mean, I think we've got a pretty good idea who the twos and threes are. Fours, as Justin was saying yesterday, I mean, Auburn's got a really deep situation there before you talk about Janai Broom getting work at the four.
Well, if Pegues is the one, then you've got to decide between Denver, Miles, and Chad which one is coming off the bench to start the game.
Right.
If Pegues is the one. Now, if Denver's the one, then Pegues is probably coming off the bench to start the game, and you would think that almost like a Zepp Jasper sort of role, and then you would go with Miles and Chad as you're starting two and three in that situation, I think.
Yeah, you probably would. I'd be surprised. I mean, I don't know.
It is interesting to think that one of either JP
one of those guys is going to be coming off the bench. At least one of those guys is going to be coming off the bench most of the time, if not all the time.
Yeah, unless either Miles or Chad starts at the four, which feels unlikely based on what we're talking about.
Well, but because I think that would be like your fourth option at the four.
Yeah, I think if they did that, but I mean, if not, then you're talking about either Denver, JP, Miles, or Chad coming off the bench, and those are four really high level players. The thought that one of them could be, he's probably going to play the hot hand at the end of games. But the thought that, yeah, one of those four could be your sixth man is in an era where where depth is more of a luxury than ever before. To have somebody like that coming off the bench for a team like this is really impressive. And then, yeah, what they do at the four, Chaney, I would not rule out Turtle Hudson. Right, I think that's a guy
right.
I mean, Turtle Hudson is somebody who produced at a really high level. He had a really strong finish to his Georgia State career. That's why he was able to go in the portal and go to SMU. He played really well. I think as a true sophomore, Hudson had a really good season in conference for Georgia State. Then had a year at SMU where he was more of a reserve piece, but is still a Bruce Pearl type of four. And I think the competition between, I mean, forget, even with the consideration that how Dylan is playing and how much they want to use Janai at the four is also going to factor in, the competition between Chaney and Turtle Hudson for minutes is going to be it feels like it's going to be a significant one, because they give you different things, mm-hmm. and they're both, I mean, they're both guys who have probably overachieved as far as, I'm not sure when either of them were freshmen in college, people said, oh, they're going to start for an SEC program at the end of their college basketball careers.
Chaney was 4 or 5 inches shorter than he is now. So,
And I think Turtle Hudson was, I mean, I don't know how heavily recruited he was even to Georgia State. Like, mm-hmm. I think this is a guy who had to prove himself at the college basketball level. He had to show people that he was able to get rebounds. I mean, had a very good, Turtle Hudson had a really good NCAA tournament game for Georgia State against Gonzaga in his
as a
true freshman,
12 or 13 rebounds.
Yeah, I mean that's a guy who, you know, had to fight against bigger, more mm-hmm. athletic, more highly touted guys. Feels like Bruce Pearl likes that story, doesn't it? The story
This
is a guy who had to outwork people who were picked ahead of him.
Bruce seems to like guys that have worked their way up and want that shot at the next level. I mean, he's had quite a bit of success bringing in guys like that.
With the exception of, I would say, Tahad Pettiford, practically everyone in the Auburn rotation is somebody who has probably overachieved a little bit to get.
Miles. Miles is a guy.
Miles, you're right. Now that's you're right. Miles is somebody with major conference. That's how about everybody else?
Right.
I mean, practically everybody else is somebody who wasn't considered. I'm not sure. I think Miles and Tahad are probably the only guys in the rotation for Auburn this year that were universally considered major conference players coming out of high school. Dylan
CDM may have been. He may have been. But
coming out of JUCO, or you think?
No, I think coming out of high school.
He went to Duquesne, though.
Yeah,
right? I think Chad changed high schools a bunch of times. I think that would absolutely be true of Chad coming out of junior college.
Right.
Like Auburn had to swoop in with A&M and Kentucky mm-hmm. coming after Chad. Dylan had a couple other offers, I believe. That would be somebody that you could make. But no, it's a story of it's not a knock against any of them, because they're here and they're on a team that's going to be a preseason top 10 title contender. But I think it speaks to the kind of guy Bruce Pearl is looking for. Often is somebody who's proven themselves.
A lot of those guys will stick around a little longer as well, and that's what you've got. You've got a situation there where they're very experienced team. All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Again, we're wide open. Love to hear from you. Anything on your mind, sports wise, here on the Friday Drive.
Born and raised in Lee County, Samantha Copeland.
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we'd love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise? Well, let's see. In Major League Baseball, the two New York teams are in, and that's odd. I mean, the Mets are in the NLCS. The Yankees are in the ALCS.
Not surprising.
And you have deciding games in both the other division series.
Not surprised that Dave Roberts, Dodgers manager, is going with Yamamoto tonight. I talked about that a little bit with Brett called yesterday. Talked about it a little bit on the show. It's. I think it would be easier to go to Flaherty in relief if Yamamoto flares
sense.
Up than it would be maybe the other way, because I don't know how much relief pitching. I mean, Yamamoto's a rookie. First postseason, I think maybe starting him and hoping that he has a hot start, you can ride him for a couple of innings, would be the dream scenario. If he runs into trouble, I would think that the Dodgers quickly go to Jack Flaherty to try to. I mean, maybe they go with a reliever to get out of a jam, but I would think maybe the plan would be if you got to pull Yamamoto, Jack Flaherty would start the next inning, and you try to get a couple innings. Like out of combined, you want 5 or 6 innings out of Yamamoto and Flaherty, and if you can do that without using Flaherty at all, and win the game, that would be the, you know, that would be great, because then you save
priority. Yeah, because I was going to say, because when does the championship series start?
I believe Sunday is game one.
I was wondering if it was Sunday or Monday.
Yeah, I would think that if you use both Flaherty and Yamamoto today, then you're probably looking at a bullpen game, yeah. Game one. Although Walker Buehler would also be out there
as an option. That's true, but I mean, you'd love to have that option for, at least for game one of a championship series.
The Mets will travel to the winner of Dodgers Padres on Sunday night. That is game one of the NLCS.
And meanwhile, I guess the Yankees are at home. Yankees know that they'll be at home the
Monday
for
night,
either Detroit or Cleveland.
Monday night, the Yankees will host the winner of tomorrow's deciding game five in the Guardians-Tigers series.
Yeah, so we'll see. Now, don't you know, I mean, Major League Baseball would love to have – I mean, right now, they're going to be okay with the Cleveland-Detroit winner, but they'd love to have L.A. and New York have the Dodgers and the Mets.
And the Padres are a lot of fun, and that's a decent-sized media market, too. It ain't L.A., but I think that, you know, I think baseball's okay with – I mean, the fact that you get the Mets and the Yankees.
They're not getting any small markets this time.
No, and the Guardians are a fan base. You know, that's a team that – they're about as long suffering as any in baseball. The thought of having either the Yankees or the Guardians, and it's not like it's been a rosy last 40 years for Tigers fans.
There have been some really down times, but there have been some
peaks too. I mean, you got most of Miguel Cabrera's Hall of Fame career, mm-hmm. you know, mixed in there too, but. There have been some valleys as well. So, I think there's, it's setting up to have some really compelling Major League Baseball matchups.
We've
got Padres Dodgers tonight on ESPN 106.7, ESPN Radio's coverage of that one. You can watch it, I believe Fox is carrying. Yeah, Fox has tonight's matchup featuring, I believe, the first. I'm gonna butcher this statistic, Bill. It is significant. For two teams to both start Japanese-born pitchers.
Yeah, I thought about that yesterday when
maybe the
first
ever.
The possibilities. I can't recall. I mean, maybe it's happened, but I thought it's got to be one of, if not the first, it's one of a very few times that you've seen that.
I believe it's the first time ever. I'll check to see if that's correct. But yeah, it's very rare for Major League Baseball to have. I would almost guarantee it's the first time ever in a winner-take-all elimination game that you're seeing Japanese-born pitchers on both sides. But yeah, Yu Darvish for the Padres and Yoshinobu Yamamoto for the LA Dodgers.
That'll be coming up here on ESPN 106.7. We mentioned that you've got we have high school football coming up on Wings and AU100 this evening at 6:30 for the pregame, 7 o'clock kick on both of those. So all kinds of sports action coming up right here on our Auburn Networks family.
Moving back to college football a little bit, Bill, I've heard some folks really curious, and I get it. I mean, how does Alabama bounce back? After a loss like that, what did that do? I mean,
and they're also playing at 11 o'clock. They are at home, but they're at home at 11 o'clock. I'm really interested to see how they do bounce back against the Gamecocks.
I do not think that is going to be a very patient crowd if that Alabama team struggles.
No, you're absolutely
to start the
right.
game on either side of the ball. I think that some early pressure for Alabama to play well, because otherwise they will. It's gonna. After a loss like that, I think that there will be an understanding. And what's crazy too is because you would think that Alabama returning home for the first time since, I mean, the last time Alabama played at home, it was that Georgia game. You'd think it'd be a party. Like the last time Alabama played at home, it was that victory over Georgia.
They beat the number one team moved to number one,
and they did it with Ryan Williams playing. Instead, they have to play well. Tom Hanks, Bill, I love that thing you do. Right when he gives him that speech, and he's like, "Hey, guys, it's very important you don't stink today." I think for
Kalen DeBoer, it's very important. Very important.
I think that's the speech.
I mean, if he wears, I wonder if he wears the same T-shirt this week.
Ooh, if so, you think maybe someone upstairs gave him a polo or something and said?
I think somebody has realized what you know some folks have been complaining about. I mean, they'll find anything to complain about when you lose.
No. So, you know what though? I think that even like I mean it's crazy in a week where Alabama loses to Vanderbilt that the coach's fashion becomes the talking point it does. But I you know what if you told me before the game. You know, without knowing anything else, Bill, if you'd like, oh, well, you know, he plans on coaching in an Alabama T-shirt, you know, a Nike Alabama T-shirt. I know the same kind of folks that bristle when journalists don't say coach at the press conference, right? Like you know, some of your stodgier, fans. I think they would, they would say, and I've even heard from younger fans who described it as inappropriate. You know, as you know, that's a word I've heard used to say. You know, a coach wearing just a T-shirt on the sidelines. So I don't know. Like I don't know what the rules are anymore post COVID as far as sideline fashion.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think if they'd won big, people would be they'd be selling those T-shirts like crazy. I mean, since Bill Parcells, he wasn't there.
Belichick.
Yeah.
I mean, what was I mean,
Belichick is
yeah,
absolutely. Was he a fashion?
I mean, yeah. I mean, how formal was the attire?
It's changed so completely, and I don't have a problem with it. I thought it was interesting, a little odd when people seemed overdressed. Yeah, I mean, you know, from the days of Tom Landry.
But
I mean, you don't need a coat and tie. You don't need to look super dressed. You're coaching, and unless you're a statue, that's a coach.
Yeah, it is.
That's fine.
That's one aspect of like when you see clips of especially NCAA tournaments from like even 17, 18, 19.
You're not
kidding. Bruce's early.
Thank you, Bruce. It's so much. I feel so much better that Bruce isn't sweating through two suits a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's seeing coaches and look, and if you're a college basketball coach who likes doing the suit and tie
sure.
thing, I mean, if you know if that's what you're comfortable coaching in on game day, then go for it. But no, I do think relaxing it a little bit was probably the best thing.
Yeah,
I'm sure you know, and I want to say it like it was a noble thing. I'm sure this was a decision by Nike and Adidas, right? I'm sure they're the ones who said, "Hey, we want the coaches wearing this instead of suits."
At least it's not baseball, you know. I mean, I was always glad in sports that, you know, I got used to seeing the baseball coaches and managers
uniforms. Leave Tommy Lasorda out of this.
They didn't need to do that. They'd have been much better just wearing some casual wear. But thank God that other sports didn't do it. Can you see basketball coaches dressed out?
Oh, like Bruce with a number? Yeah.
No. All right. Let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio and love for you to join in. You heard the number 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind sports-wise? Your thoughts on any of the big ball games going on this weekend?
We talked about it a little bit in the last segment, and it's important that Alabama's under a lot of pressure. You know, we've talked about some other games that are elimination games for teams involved. Alabama's under pressure, not just because a loss would be catastrophic to their playoff chances, but also coming off of a loss at Vanderbilt last week. I think they're under early pressure to play well,
mm-hmm.
To sort of quiet down the more vocal and restless aspects of their fan base after a loss like that. Having said that, I would if they were facing a middle of the pack SEC team or better, I would think this is an opportunity for them to you know crumble under early adversity. I don't think South Carolina's got the firepower. Like I just
after their second week. When they destroyed Kentucky, I thought, wow, this could be interesting. But since then, they have really Their offense has been bad.
Yeah, LSU, and I know they scored points against LSU, but a lot of that was LSU turnovers and mistakes giving them field. I don't think they like the underlying offensive numbers aren't all that impressive, mm-hmm. even though they scored 33 points against LSU. So I think it's I don't know how they're going to consistently move the ball.
Alabama. Be able to throw the ball with pretty good consistency, and that's one thing. Diego Pavia is he makes plays, and it's not just a throw it up and hope that somebody comes, you know, throw it up and hope your prayers are answered kind of thing, which it looks like that's what South Carolina's passing game is.
Yeah, Sellers was 20 of 32 for 162 yards. Against Ole Miss. I mean, so you're talking about 20 completions.
5 yards per attempt, 8 yards per completion. That's not very impressive.
He threw an INT. He also ran it himself 55 yards. They ran it as a team less than, under 4 yards per attempt. And that was against Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be, I mean, they got to figure some things out as a passing offense. And it's not, like, this is a tough time to do it. In Tuscaloosa against a team that is furious after what happened last week.
They are, but again, I said it's 11 o'clock. They're going to Knoxville next week. I'm sure that, the Vandy loss should get your focus back, but I still wonder. I mean, I wonder how many of them are still just thinking, well, that was a fluke, and we've got Tennessee next week, and it's an 11 o'clock game where the fans aren't going to be into it as much as they would for a later game.
After you lose to Vanderbilt, if they struggle against South Carolina, I'm not going to chalk it up to looking at Tennessee. I'm going to start thinking, what's wrong? Like, if things that went wrong against Vanderbilt go wrong against South Carolina, I don't know how much of it's looking ahead and how much
if they struggle defensively against South Carolina, then Tennessee's got to be, chomping at the bit.
And then you start
next week.
And then you start looking at, well, what's the score since halftime of the Georgia game, Bill?
Yeah, well, they've given up 67 points in the last 6 quarters. And 780 yards in the last 6 quarters.
Yeah.
That's 130 yards a quarter.
If South Carolina's moving the football, I'm not sure it's because they're looking ahead to Tennessee. Not after 6 quarters like that.
Well, that's the first game tomorrow, so that'll be a fun one to be watching. There's some games tomorrow that just look like mismatches. How can Mississippi State,
expect
to be able to do anything against Georgia?
How many games on their schedule do you feel like they have a puncher's chance of doing too much?
They've got UMass at home.
Okay, well.
But the rest of them at Georgia, Texas A&M, Arkansas, at Tennessee, Missouri, and at Ole Miss. I don't see another conference win.
See a competitive.
That's going to be an upset if they get another conference.
I don't see a terribly competitive game in that mix. Maybe Arkansas if Arkansas has a bad night.
But Arkansas.
Arkansas. It would be a test of can Arkansas's offense
right.
sort of do too much there, because I think Arkansas's defense can keep. I mean, Arkansas's defense is going to give Mississippi State a lot of trouble. Practically every defense in the conference mm-hmm. is going to give Mississippi State a lot of trouble, based on what we've seen so far this year.
Yeah, you're right. Of course, those are the kind of games that we've seen just completely backfire, but I don't see that one happening. Vandy, Kentucky is a really interesting game to me. And this one, it looks odd, doesn't it, that Kentucky is as heavily favored as they are? Kentucky is near 2 touchdown favorite against the Commodores. Maybe the feeling is, Vandy's still got their head in the clouds. Maybe so. Kentucky has had an open date. But I haven't seen enough from Kentucky's offense to feel like they're going to win by a couple of scores unless Vandy helps them out.
I mean, the fact that Kentucky played Georgia as close as they did and went to Oxford and won, like isolating those two games, you would think Kentucky is a very good team. You also have to account for the South Carolina game, right? Which, that's sort of in the back.
Yeah, like Vandy doesn't even have a game like that. Vandy lost at the end, right at the end to Georgia State after they'd taken the lead, lost in double overtime at Missouri.
That's a confusing team. Kentucky, right?
Yes,
because,
they are.
I mean, and because when you've
the defense appears to be the real deal,
and difficult to trust when you throw up a performance like the one at home against, like when you lose like that against South Carolina, well, it's like, ooh,
so bad offensively. Brock Vandegrift, remember, was didn't throw for, it was like less than 90 yards, I believe he threw for against them. In a game, they were getting blown out,
and they only had about 300 yards, 330, I think, in the win in Oxford.
Yeah,
like it's not like they've figured things out.
Their offense has not been great. Now, Ole Miss, I think Ole Miss's defense is better than it's been the last few years, but yeah, Kentucky needs Brock Vandegrift to play well, because if they're one dimensional, they really, really struggle.
Yeah, and for Vanderbilt, it's about, you know, trying to put last week in the rearview mirror as best you can, and go out and try to win another SEC game. I mean, if Vanderbilt can win this one,
they just sort of strike me. I mean, with Pavia, I mean, I don't think he's the type that won't be ready to play this week. And when your quarterback's that way, generally the offense is going to be that way.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be ready to take some shots against Kentucky.
No, I would agree. I mean, I think that's a game where unless the Vanderbilt. If Vanderbilt's defense struck, you know, if they're giving up big plays, suddenly the pressure's on Vanderbilt. You know, that could spell trouble, because Kentucky does seem to be pretty stout defensively. But if Vanderbilt can keep Kentucky's offense somewhat bottled up, and you give Pavi a shot or two to make a big play, there's a path for another upset for Vanderbilt this year.
Oh yeah. Again, 334-321-1390. I'd love for you to let us know your thoughts. Missouri, for some reason, is at UMass the week before Auburn heads over there.
They must have booked that
it's
like 15
for a while.
Yeah, 15 years ago or something.
But I think they were an SEC team when they did it. What do you think?
Lose their charter. Boot them for playing a road game like that.
Can Florida? Give Tennessee some problems.
David had real reservations about Tennessee yesterday, didn't he? He had real reservations about the Vols.
You know, all right.
Their offense has struggled the last couple of games. We love giving credit to Travis Williams, and he deserves credit because of the way the Arkansas defense played, mm-hmm. not just in the win at Auburn, but the win
over Tennessee.
The win over Tennessee. And they played pretty good defense for much of the season, but I really like it was kind of alarming the way Nico struggled down the stretch in that game, and I think that Tennessee probably needs him to hit a shot or two early on, mm-hmm. and get that confidence back and get that swagger back and feel like he's, you know, feel like he's a guy who can do just about anything on a college football field, because Arkansas really. Really made him play against type last week, and that's something that Tennessee needs to avoid. And if Florida can do that, that's another fan base that might get a little bit nervous if the team struggles to start the game, right? Like Tennessee's going to be – that place will be a hornet's nest to begin the game, but if it's 7-0 Florida and you watch Tennessee punt a couple of times – you wonder exactly how much life you'll be talking about there in Knoxville.
Tennessee is still averaging over 500 yards a game total offense, but it hasn't been anywhere near that the last couple of weeks. Can Florida hold them down? I just don't know if they can.
I think Tennessee took a pretty conservative approach in the second half against
Oklahoma. Once they had the lead, I think they felt Oklahoma wasn't going to be able to do anything, so they didn't take any chances.
But they didn't take that approach against Arkansas.
No, they were
taking their shots, and Arkansas was defending them correctly. And Nico took. I mean, if you didn't watch it, Nico takes a couple of huge hits, like vintage college football quarterback hits on the scrambles, and I mean they're clean because he's inbound scrambling, or their throws. Where they're hitting him as he's getting rid of it, and they're not hitting him in restricted areas or anything like that. I mean, but Nico took a pounding last week at the end of the Arkansas game, and yeah, that's got to be. I mean, how would you describe it, Bill? His willingness to take big hits, his mm-hmm. bravery. That's something. You know what? That's something a lot of quarterbacks grow out of. You know what I mean? Like, that's something that, like, you get a little bit older, you say, I don't want to take hits like that anymore. And I wonder if, if Saturday was a moment like that for Nico. Because Tennessee's got a lot riding on him staying
healthy.
They
do, but I mean, I look, and Florida is 15th in the SEC in total defense. They're giving up almost 400 yards a game.
A&M did whatever they wanted, right? It was in Miami too. I mean, you remember that first, that opener.
I just don't know. I mean, I don't know that Florida's defense is going to be able. I think it's much more likely that Tennessee is able to explode again against the Gators. So,
Florida's defense had a pretty good night against UCF. You don't know exactly how good this UCF team is.
No,
they've hit the skids a little bit since beating TCU a couple of weeks ago. But it was progress, because at least you're not talking about a Florida defense that got shredded by UCF in that victory.
Yeah, but I mean, look, Florida has played Samford and Mississippi State are two of the five teams they played, and then the UCF win last week, and they still are giving up 400 yards a game.
Yeah.
I mean, the two teams you mentioned did shred them, but they're giving up some yards too to some teams that they shouldn't be.
So Tennessee might be the best offense they've played so far.
I don't think there's any question that that's the best offense they've played so far.
That's where it could be. And if this game isn't competitive, and Tennessee is
the Billy Napier talk will fire right back up.
Oh, I don't think it's talk that'll fire back up. I wonder if Tennessee
almost seemed like he got a little bit of a reprieve with some of the big shocks last week and them beating UCF.
If you told me Tennessee wins a non-competitive game on Saturday, I would think there's a pretty good chance we go on the air Monday and he's not the coach anymore. Like, I would think we go on the air Monday and Billy. Like, I would think that if you get,
they've got another open date coming up after Kentucky.
If you get trounced, where's the Kentucky game?
The Kentucky game's in Gainesville.
If you get trounced in Knoxville, I don't think he's coaching another game.
Then somebody could be an interim coach there for Kentucky. Open date before they have the Georgia game.
Yeah, I don't think you let him face the crowd in Gainesville again if he gets trounced in Knoxville. I think you just go ahead. That makes a lot of sense. I think you go ahead and pull the plug.
All right, we'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
This November, our country needs common sense and strong leadership to return to the White House.
4321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of hour number one here on the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we'd love to hear from you. Any of your thoughts on anything? We're at the midpoint, pretty much, of the season. Most teams will either be starting the second half here in the next week or so, or wrapping up the first half this week. As we were saying yesterday, just about everybody's played five games. A few teams, including Auburn, have played six. So we'll be at the midpoint for pretty much everybody in the country. And there's still so many questions, Dan, in college football. I mean, I feel like there are more teams capable of beating top teams this year than usually is the case. Usually, you feel like there's a team or there are a few teams that you just know are head and shoulders above everybody else. I'm not sure of that yet. We'll find out a little more. You know, Ohio State's going on the road for the first time. They're going out to Oregon. Well,
the Big 12 is full of these teams that, like, I have no idea if they're good or not.
No.
Like, there are a bunch of teams that are 4-1 or better in the Big 12, including Utah and Arizona State, who play tonight. I think that game's on FS1. Those are two 4-1 teams playing each other in Phoenix. Kenny Dillingham, former Auburn assistant coach there in Arizona. Kansas State's 4-1, Colorado's 4-1, Iowa State's 5-0, BYU's 5-0, Texas Tech's 5-1. Their only loss was that they got destroyed by Washington State, and you know they're 3-0 in conference after that. So it's like, I have no idea what to make of the you know, aside from the teams that you have a pretty good feel. I mean, if you have two conference losses or more, you know what's amazing? Oklahoma State 0-3 in league play.
No kidding.
In the Big 12, a team that was maybe the favorite to win the thing.
Mm-hmm. A lot of folks had them as the favorite to win.
After the Arkansas game, instead, you're looking at Kansas was a preseason top 25 team. They're 0-3 in the Big 12. So it's a that league is bigger than ever. It's crazier than ever, and I have no idea. It feels impossible to handicap right now, and there's also the thought that one of these teams is going to be in the college football playoff.
Well,
at least one of these teams.
College football is crazier than ever, and we've talked about it. I mean, there's no question the transfer portal has really changed things. And remember, Jason even told us Wednesday he was completely wrong about this. He felt like the best would get even better, and it would be at the expense of other teams. Now, granted, the best teams are still able to get really, really good players. They may get the top players sometimes, but their players who have been providing quality depth or have been on, guys that would be the next in line to be starters, they're not waiting in line. They're going somewhere else, and they're playing, and they're helping a lot of these other teams, and you're getting now more and more upsets, or, the have-nots are much closer to the haves than they've ever been.
The worry was, and I remember talking about this with Jason, I think we had it at the time, was, you're going to have programs, they're going to have starter-level players four deep on the depth chart because they have the financial resources to pay starter-level players going down four deep the depth chart. Playing time still matters quite a bit.
Absolutely.
There are kids, and you even get the sense that maybe there are kids leaving money on the table to be a backup somewhere.
You know what?
Because they could start somewhere else.
True, but I think it's tougher to pay your third string guy as much as another school might pay them as a first stringer. So that sort of helps balance things out. All right, we're halfway done here on the Friday Drive. Plenty of time for you to join us. 334-321-1390 as we head into hour number two.
Production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Love for you to join in here in the final hour of the week. We've got high school football coming up tonight over on Wings 94.3. Auburn hosting Smith Station. 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock kick. Meanwhile, Lee Scott back in action. I believe it's Dadeville tonight. 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock kick over on AU 100. Meanwhile, here on ESPN 106.7, we will have the deciding game in the National League Division Series.
Dadeville beat Lee Scott last week, 13-10. It is Wadley tonight.
Okay, that's right.
Just four games left on the schedule for Lee Scott.
Well, yeah, the season's winding down.
Right.
And Auburn High is going to have a 9-game schedule because of that cancellation. And they're still perfect and number one team in the state over in 7A. So both at home tonight. And again, AU 100 for Lee Scott, Wings 94.3 for Auburn High. I was about to say.
Covered a Wadley game back in my Opelika Auburn News.
Stringer days.
Stringer days, Bill. My old Friday night Stringer days there. So, yeah, I remember seeing the Wadley kids a couple of times.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good year. I believe that's the only loss Lee Scott has is the one last week to Dable.
I think that might be the second loss of the season for Lee Scott.
They played pretty well.
Yeah,
they played pretty well in their first year in the moving from the private school classification.
Randolph County beat them
a week earlier,
but still, so they had played extremely well. 4-0 start.
Yeah, won the first four.
Two region games left for Lee Scott. I don't believe tonight's game. I don't think Wadley has won. But then I think the next two after that are region games, big ones after mm-hmm. having dropped these last two.
Tonight we've got ESPN 106.7 coming up. The first pitch is at. Is it 8:08 or 7:08?
It's 7:08. I believe.
Right, that would mean probably at 6:30. The pregame gets started on ESPN 106.7 for the Dodgers and Padres from LA, deciding game in that series.
By the way, I was wrong earlier. Utah Arizona State is on ESPN tonight, so you got a couple.
Oh, that's
pretty
right.
Cool. I mean, you got Dodgers Padres, winner take all from Dodger Stadium. Yu Darvish starting for the Padres against Yamamoto for the LA Dodgers. And yeah, I mean, a series just been back and forth. Dodgers with that commanding victory in Game 4 when the Padres could have punched their ticket at home. Now the Padres will have to do it on the road, or the Dodgers with a chance to do it in front of the Chavez Ravine faithful. First game of the Dodgers or Padres against the Mets. We were talking about that earlier. That will be Sunday night.
Yeah, on the West Coast.
Yeah, so Sunday night. That yeah, and the Mets will travel for the first game of that series. Yeah, Sunday night on Fox. Winner of Dodgers Padres hosts the Mets in the NLCS. Monday night, winner of Guardians Tigers tomorrow hosts the New York Yankees. Guardians Tigers, is that going on during Ohio State Oregon?
Wow, you know, I hadn't thought about
what
that.
What a big day for Ohio sports bars.
It is at noon tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean the thought. I mean you got a winner take all Cleveland Guardians playoff game to go to the ALCS against the Yankees, and Ohio State playing a top five matchup on the road tomorrow against the Oregon Ducks. That is a big one.
And that Ohio State Oregon game, what that's a 2:30.
I think that's the 2:30. That's the 2:30 game.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you've got a Big Ten matchup.
Big Ten on CBS, right?
You've got a Big Ten matchup tonight in college football with Northwestern at Maryland tonight on FS1. Am I wrong?
Great. I have nothing to contribute about either.
I know a little more about
Utah Arizona State.
Absolutely. Like, that's more compelling of a ball game. But I'm just saying, there's a Big Ten. You got that Big Ten Friday night game.
By the way, we were wrong. Ohio State Oregon is a 6:30 game on NBC.
Oh, okay.
So that's the night game tomorrow on NBC and Peacock. I was thinking that was the Big Ten.
Yeah, for some reason I was thinking it was the 2:30.
I was thinking that was the 2:30 CBS game. Penn State USC is the 2:30 CBS game tomorrow. So you've got still a busy day in Ohio for your sports fans. I mean, between a game
now Cleveland Detroit winner. I thought they'd be going to New York.
They are going on Monday. Monday night they won't be hosting. No, on Monday night they will go to
the winner there will travel to Yankee Stadium.
Yes, the Mets know they're going on the road for Game 1. The Yankees know they're hosting Game 1. The opponents will be sorted out in the next 36 hours or so we'll have the four teams in the championship series.
Yeah, and my wife was just asking yesterday. She's like, the baseball season just lasts so long, and it's like doesn't really last that much longer than it used to. It'll be over before November.
It's still going to be
late October.
If you follow a baseball team and a college basketball team very closely, you have something to do 12 months of the year. Because as soon as your baseball team is done playing their season, it's college. I mean within a week of the ending of the World Series, we're going to be playing regular season college basketball games,
and then college basketball wraps up the week of the start of Major League Baseball.
We're having a draft. Yeah, we're trying to do Greystone draft stuff, and we're worrying about what's going on.
Yeah, the Sweet 16.
Where are you going to be, and where's Ferg going to be, and where am I going to be, and stuff like that. So it is amazing how those two sports. It's almost
that'll take up your full 12 months.
A Braves season ticket holder like our buddy Ferg, who also goes to every single Auburn men's basketball game, is going to have something to pay attention to year round. The Cleveland Detroit game is early, right?
That is a noon. It's like 1:08 Eastern is first pitch.
I wonder if the Ohio State game being at night played a role in the decision to play that game a little bit earlier, if there was trying to avoid like the primetime matchups in college football. Maybe played a role in that game being a day, because usually a Saturday afternoon. A Saturday playoff game would be a little bit later on, and the decision to play this one earlier. I love it, by the way. Matinee day, playoff baseball. I love the idea that game's going to be in the daytime.
Yep. We've got all that going on. You think
the Dodgers win tonight?
I think they do.
Yeah,
I think they do. Now that it's back, I think all the pressure's on the Padres now, because they've been so close, and they They usually can't get over that hump. They had the opportunity last night. They, you know, they felt so good going in with Dylan Cease on the mound and the Dodgers going with the bullpen game, not before last, I guess, but going in and being at home with that just ridiculous, raucous crowd behind them, and they got shut down very quickly. It got quieted quickly, and now the Padres, they've got to be feeling it. It's like, man, you know, this is it. We should have won it. We could have won it at home. So, no, I think the pressure's all on the Padres.
Tatis and Machado are both guys who they can run so hot, but mm-hmm. they can also it can escape them. You know, they can and Tatis is hitting the ball really well. You know, is having a historic playoff series to this point. But that's got to be. I don't think they thought they'd be playing a game five in L.A. No. And I certainly don't think they thought they'd be shut out in the by the Dodgers bullpen in that game in game four. So yeah, this is it's a really big spot. It's a big spot for Yamamoto, obviously, but it's also a big spot for the Padres offense, because I think the longer they struggle, it's a little bit like Alabama or Tennessee, right? The longer that offense struggles, the more people will start to wonder if there's a real problem. And San Diego doesn't have they don't have time to fix it.
Like it's
winner take all.
Yep. And that'll be coming up on ESPN 106.7 tonight, about a half an hour following the drive. One of the things we didn't get into in hour number one, I mean, we talked a good bit about some of the other games. We really haven't talked much Auburn football since the Tigers have an open date. But Auburn last night picking up adding another commitment to the class of 2025 as they flip another player, Sam Turner, the receiver who had been committed to Georgia Tech. Flipping and joining the Auburn class.
And, you know, I think if you had told me, and Bill, I wonder, you know, if I had told you that Auburn's going to go into the bye week and it's 2-4, I think you would have wondered how that would have played on the recruiting trail, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have young players now who are threatening to sit out or canceling the rest of their Auburn careers and planning on going in the portal? And do you have recruits, commitments, who are reconsidering their Auburn commitment and going elsewhere? To this point...
Not yet.
Yeah, to this point, it doesn't really seem like... I mean, there's a concern to get this thing turned around because they want to win games that they shouldn't lose. But I don't know if there's this worry that, especially because so many of these guys are getting playing time.
Yeah, did you see the stat today that Auburn football posted? That Auburn has played more, Auburn freshmen have played more minutes defensively this year than any other team in the country. So Auburn's had more freshman defensive minutes played than any other team in the country.
I know that the Auburn Instagram page touted something about, I believe Malik Blockton has played. I mean, I don't think there's an SEC true freshman defensive lineman who's played as many snaps as Malik Blockton this season.
And that's why he's a mid-season freshman All-American.
He's grading out very. I mean, not just among true. Like he's grading out not just as one of the best true freshman defensive linemen. There have been weeks where he's graded out as one of the best defensive linemen mm-hmm. in the conference. Jay Crawford has become your starter.
Yeah, and he played nearly every snap last week against Georgia.
After doing the same against Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Like this is a guy who's been out there a ton. So Caleb Harris.
He's playing more and more every week.
There was an ESPN.com article in the last week that named Caleb Harris, I believe, one of the 10 true freshmen who are making the biggest impact this season in college football. Ryan Williams at the top of that list, not shocking.
Sure.
But Caleb Williams, they're in the top 10 as well. I think Auburn's been thrilled with the production they've gotten out of number 18 in the secondary, and you're seeing more Riddick every single week. Like that's a guy who mm-hmm. it's going to be harder and harder to keep him off the field, because when he gets out there, it feels like you've unleashed.
He makes plays.
Doesn't it feel like he's moving at a it's a different pace?
Everybody else is moving slower than he is.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit of the Malcolm Simmons on offense where it's like, oh, this is. You can understand immediately why they needed to get this guy out there, because he's doing things that even the fifth year upperclassmen linebackers can't quite do at that rate, at that pace. So yeah, I think there's reason to believe that that some of these defensive linemen or some of these defense, some of these first and second year players, especially on defense, although Auburn's playing some freshmen on offense too. But there's reason to think, boy, they could get more experience and maybe more comfortable in their roles. And that's when you do start thinking about, like, what could this mean for the rest of their college football careers, especially if they, you know, players like that tend to stick around. Like, you don't see as much, you know, like, playing time tends to play a huge role. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, you want your team to win too, but, you know, if a freshman's in the portal, I would wonder how much he played in his first
right.
year.
That or just the situation appeared hopeless as far as the team being able to win. And Auburn hasn't won, but they've been very close, and they've been in position to be able to win games. And that's something that, you know, these guys feel like they're about to get there, whether it be this year or not. But the addition of Sam Turner.
At this point, I'd be pretty surprised by, especially if we're talking about first and second year players who seem to be in the equation for 2025, I'd be surprised by an exodus. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah.
if a bunch of guys who feel like, oh yeah, they've
of the ones we're seeing playing a lot. Yes,
that's what I mean. Of the ones you're seeing playing a lot, who seem like they could be comfortably penciled in near the top of their positions on the Bill Cameron depth chart for 2025. Mm-hmm. I feel like it'd be a surprise to see a lot of those guys leave, because it does seem like Auburn offers a combination of opportunity to get on the field and a well stocked NIL cupboard to stay competitive economically.
Yeah, I think so. All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Love your thoughts on, you know, all right, here we are at the midpoint. Obvious, it's disappointing. What do you think should be done? What do you think you're going to see from Auburn in the second half of the season, which will start with back-to-back road games starting next week with Missouri and Kentucky before the Tigers come home to start November against those Vanderbilt Commodores. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
Live here on this Friday afternoon. My computer's acting like it's Friday. It wants to take the week off. It just keeps doing this.
Oh, it's giving you a loading screen again?
It starts up and then it shuts down. Then it says
it was giving you. It was giving you problems when
doing that a while back
with the battery, right? When it had to go to battery power only and not on the charger, wasn't it acting like it was acting like it wanted to make sure you're plugged all the way? Ooh, maybe it's a power source problem.
Golly, I don't know. I mean, it's been crazy. It's like it would tease me. It would get to the point where it brings up the screensaver. And then it goes black, and then it restarts every time. So you have to excuse me. A couple of the things I was looking up, all of a sudden I lost.
What do you think of Texas Oklahoma, Bill?
I don't see Oklahoma winning it. It's hard for me to see them staying extremely close.
Good defense. It's a good Oklahoma defense.
It is.
I wonder how long they're going to be on the field. Oklahoma couldn't really get first downs against Auburn, right? I mean, they got the two big plays. Early in the game, the quarterback has the long run. Late in the game, the quarterback hits the 60-yard pass play. Other than that, I mean,
Auburn
very
shut
quiet.
Them down in between those two big plays.
And I don't know where Auburn is better than Texas defensively.
No,
I don't know where.
No.
Like, I don't know
I,
where.
I can't imagine.
I don't know at what spot.
Texas is loaded. I mean, they right now appear to be the best. They look to be the best team in the country right now.
Yeah.
We will see.
Even if Oklahoma's defense plays well, 24 would be a reasonable. Like, if Texas scored 24 points, that's the only thing I told you about tomorrow's game, I'd be like, wow, Oklahoma's defense
is pretty good.
And they probably lost.
Probably 24 to 10.
They lost by 10 or more.
Yeah.
Like, would be my guess.
That's the thing. It's hard for me to see Oklahoma keeping this one close. I mean,
now, if you told Texas scored 10.
Oh, then I'd say, what a shock that is.
Yeah. Now, hold on a second. Now, you know, maybe
Oklahoma
there's...
probably wins.
Yeah. Okay.
Probably.
But 24, no,
but
I don't
Oklahoma
think
beat
so.
Them last year. You know, they've got Quinn Ewers back.
Oklahoma had a better offense last year.
Dylan
Gabriel, who's now playing in a
top five
matchup on Saturday night instead. But no, he was a big part of their victory. Played very well in the victory over Texas last year. I just think Oklahoma would need that quarterback to just be he would have to take a huge step forward, Hawkins Jr.
I mean, there's no way that Texas is looking past Oklahoma. I mean, after what happened last year, because Texas does host Georgia next week.
It's amazing. What a 2 week stretch. Week. Yeah. What a 2 week stretch.
I mean, we'll find. I mean, Oklahoma is. I think Oklahoma is just a solid team this year. They're one of those middle teams. You've got four or five teams, maybe four teams at the top, and then you've got a bunch of teams that are pretty good behind them. We'll see. Maybe Texas A&M is a team that might be a whole lot better than we thought.
And Texas goes there. That's a road game for Texas at the end of the season. So I mean, they've got even in what seemed to be a favorable draw for Texas, and I think Texas could probably lose to Georgia and A&M and have a decent shot at the playoff at 10 and 2.
Texas also goes to Arkansas,
which is a more interesting game.
That looked like early in the season, Texas, or preseason, we're like, well, you can mark those two down as wins, at Arkansas and at Texas A&M, because they're just not very good. They're a whole lot better than we thought.
Texas also goes to Vanderbilt. That's a game on the schedule after the Georgia game. So, yeah, I mean, there's
crazy.
There's some intriguing games there. But, no, I would think that Oklahoma just does not have – even if the Oklahoma defense played great, I would think that Oklahoma does not have the offense to stay with Texas.
Would need to do what Auburn did against Cal and Arkansas. They need to turn it over 4+ times.
Yeah, you would need an implosion at the quarterback position, an implosion of the Texas offense, If that happens, Oklahoma's got a shot, but it feels unlikely.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, that one, again, the Kentucky-Vandy game seems like a better game or a tighter game than the Texas-Oklahoma game does.
Yeah, want to see how the Kentucky offense looks, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're throwing the ball more than they were.
Vandy played much better the last couple of games.
They're at home.
He really struggled early on.
You would think that's, you know, if Vandegrift can, if you get a decent game out of Vandegrift, now Vanderbilt's under pressure to keep the game close and stay in it. If Kentucky struggles to move the football, you know, it opens things up for Vanderbilt. But no, that's an intriguing matchup late between a couple of teams that just really don't want to pick up loss number three this early in the season.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline. Love for you to join in. I had the SEC stats pulled up a little while ago, and I don't know what the heck I did with them. I wanted to look. Here we go. I was surprised when I saw some of the numbers in here. You know, we were talking about the Arkansas defense a little while ago. The Arkansas offense is fourth in the conference in total offense. Arkansas is like ninth or tenth in total defense, but they're fourth in the conference in total offense. So,
I was saying, looking at the thing we were talking about earlier about the Cleveland game,
mm-hmm.
Bill, the Guardians-Tigers game, there's a threat of bad weather in Cleveland on Saturday night.
Oh, okay.
So
that's why they moved it.
They were going to have the two games on at the same time on Saturday night. They were going
the Indians
to have,
and Ohio State playing
that,
at the same time?
It was going to be, Guardians-Tigers was going to start at 7 o'clock Central on Saturday night. Threat of inclement weather has moved it 7 hours earlier, so they're going to play that game at 1 o'clock Eastern, noon Central tomorrow, which allows fans to they're not going to have to switch back and forth. They'll be able to watch one and then watch the other one a little bit later on. Scooble going tomorrow for the Tigers in that one. You know, I mean, AL Cy Young, AL Triple Crown. Some huge baseball tomorrow on top of all the college football.
The Tigers got to feel like, I mean, this is their best shot. I mean, and they have been such an unbelievable story since the All-Star break, and to have the best pitcher in the American League going tomorrow, I think that's great for them.
And how about Spencer Rattler getting the start for the Saints this weekend too?
Yeah.
Adding him to Derek Carr injured like an abdominal muscle or something Monday night in the victory over or the loss to the Chiefs on Monday night,
mm-hmm.
and the Saints going with the backup former South Carolina and Oklahoma starting quarterback. Spencer Rattler is going to be out there for the New Orleans Saints against Baker Mayfield and the Bucks.
Yeah,
a lot of rookie quarterbacks, a lot of guys we saw.
You're right.
Jaden Daniels, and it's Bo Nix, and you know, and Spencer Rattler, and you know, a lot of familiar names around college football. The quarterbacks contributing as rookies this year.
334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline. All right. When I was looking, I love to look at these, and you wonder how much it really tells you when you look at some of the stats. You figure you're halfway through the season, you ought to have a pretty good idea. Obviously, the most important thing is scoring offense and scoring defense. And in that, I mean, Auburn is 12th in scoring offense, but they're 6th in the conference in total offense. That gets back to one of the things we were talking about with Justin yesterday. Auburn's points per play and their points just
per game.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the points per game. I mean, in the Power Five, Auburn Power Four, Auburn's top 20 points one time in their four conference, in their four losses, and those are the four Power Four games.
The other
games, you know, 2 13s and a 13 and 2 14s.
The other thing that can make some of those yards seem like empty calories is that Auburn has had a couple of games where it feels like they are constantly starting inside their own 20. Not at the 20.
Inside their own 10. Auburn has had, I mean, three or four times this year we've seen kickoffs being returned, a penalty flag tossed at around the 15 or inside the 15-yard line, and Auburn having to start from inside their 10.
Cal had punted twice that pinned Auburn inside their own five. So two different drives in the Cal game start inside the five. Georgia pinned Auburn deep with a drive, you know, with a well-placed punt. I mean, so that's another thing. I mean, because for an offense moving the football the way Auburn does, they are not. It's not just about points. They're not in opponents' territory enough.
Well,
they're not on the correct side of the 50 enough. You know, for an offense doing what Auburn has done statistically. That was, you know, Ferg was talking about like the EP play, you know, the EPA and some of the. Some of the advanced statistics that measure how often is an offense crossing the 50? How often is an offense in the opposing
starting,
teams?
If you're starting inside your own 20, it's more difficult to cross the 50. And I would love to see, and I'm sure it's out there somewhere, Auburn's average starting field position. Because it Auburn has, with
pick one of the four losses at random. Right now, pick one of the games.
Well, Let's go with Cal.
But
because I was going to say, one thing that really can help you in average field position is turnovers. If you're creating turnovers, you're more likely to get favorable field position. Auburn is not creating turnovers. On the other hand, they have turned the ball over, leading the nation in turnovers, and we talked about some of the situations from special teams.
In the first half against Cal, Auburn's drives started. First drive started at the 25. Second drive started at the 25. There was a personal foul on first down on that play, on that drive. So Auburn was first and 22 at their own 13 to start.
So they really started at the 13.
Really started. Though
officially, it starts at the 25.
Third drive started at the third drive was the one play interception drive that starts at the 20. Fourth drive started at the 25. Fifth drive started at the 20. Sixth drive started at the 12 after a well-placed.
So Auburn
Cal
had
punt.
No drives that started outside their 25, their own 25.
In the first half. Second half, Cal, the first drive starts at the 2. Second drive starts at the 2. Those are the two drives after Cal drives and punts. So your first two drives start at the 2. Then you start a drive at the 34. That is a one-play interception drive. Your next drive starts at the 37 after Cal misses a field goal. That is a two-play fumble. Drive. Then Auburn, then you have a drive that starts at the 25 after a Cal touchdown. That's a touchdown drive for Auburn, and a drive that starts at the 20, and another drive that starts at the 20.
So you still average starting inside your 25 in the second half.
Yes.
Your best starting field position was your own 37.
And several drives starting inside inside the 15.
That makes it extremely difficult for an offense. You need to be one then that can have long sustained drives, and that's the other thing that this offense doesn't appear built for. They like to get chunk yards, and it's great. It's great to get explosive plays, but it has seemed that for Auburn, it's been either get a big play or you're punting.
You've made a point of it, though. I guess a penalty on first down that turns first and 10 into first and 22 is a similar issue. But penalties on the kick returns that pin you 5, 10, 15 yards deeper and eliminate any gain you made on the kick return. Like, I mean, if that happens enough, then just put two more blockers out there, and the rule is, you know, hot potato.
Fair catch it. Fair catch it if you can. Let it go into the end. If it's going to the end zone, just let it go.
The moment it touches the end zone, the play's dead. Like, that's the way it works in college football. So just wave it off and run away. And if it gets on the ground, dive on it. But it's unfortunate because you feel like you have.
Yeah, you've got a couple of guys that feel could really make big plays. And it hasn't been like the same player with charged with the penalties.
But if you're constantly stepping on a banana peel on that play, then I would hope that's something they've really tried to iron out during the and maybe it's personnel. Like maybe you say, all right, you're committing a penalty or two. We got 15 other guys that want to be out there, you know, impacting kick return. You know, one of those guys gets a shot instead. I don't know. But that's got to be. They got to find a way to work through that.
Mm-hmm. All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We've got about 25 minutes or so left. You can join us, 334-321-1390, here on the Friday Drive.
Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Final 20 minutes or so. Bill and Dan here in the studio getting ready for another fun weekend. I mean, a lot of things going on in sports. It's an open weekend for Auburn football, but I mean, there are a lot of things going on.
I think we're sort of lucky. I mean, if you're going to pick a bye week for Auburn, it's a week with some pretty compelling college football games and some high stakes baseball as well. So I mean, I'm excited to see what it looks like. Get started. I mean, tonight you've got. I haven't talked about it too much, but I mean, Utah, Arizona State. We don't have Pac-12 after dark anymore. Some of these Big 12 games and some of these West Coast ACC
games. That's what they feel like.
Yeah, but I mean that's what it is now. And I mean, Utah is going to be playing at Arizona State. That game starts 9:30 Central. 10:30 Eastern, that game in Phoenix. The winner of that game is going to be 5-1 and feeling like a real contender in the Big 12 6 games into the season. And so I mean that's a league that will most likely get a team into the college football playoff.
Well,
so,
yeah, as long as everybody in the league doesn't have two losses, I mean they're gonna get in because the top four conference champs are in. The winner of that conference is going to get a bye.
Yeah, someone in that league is probably going to be the 4 seed.
Yes,
I mean one with. I mean you have the.
Well, the ACC champ, yeah, probably will be the 3 seed. You think?
I mean, someone in that league is probably going to be your 4 seed. You know, and so it's a matter, you know, who's going to work their way into that situation, and there could be some unlikely contenders. I mean, I would not rule out Colorado. As crazy as it sounds, no. I would not rule out Colorado in that position.
I didn't believe in them at the beginning of the season, but they're better. They're better this year.
And I still don't know, you know, if they make it to the college football playoff and they play the kind of team that's going to be waiting for the 4 seed in the second round. Like I don't know how that's going to look for any of these Big 12 teams. You know, if they find themselves matched up with. You know, with the team that lost the SEC championship game. You know, if that's the team you find yourself playing in, you know, as the 4 seed in the second round, because
they're gonna play most likely the best team that didn't get a bye.
I was gonna say they play that's gonna be the 5-12 game is, you know, the 4 seed. Yeah, so if you're playing the 5-12,
I'm not as concerned about the 12, but yeah, the 5 is probably gonna be a pretty darn good team. It's gonna be the second. Probably it'll be the second best team from either the SEC or the Big Ten, most likely the SEC.
Right, and so that's going to be, I think, a challenge. It, as far as I can tell, it's going to be a challenge for any team in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. But they can punch their ticket. You know, they can get there and give themselves a shot. And so that's a game tonight that has some ramifications in a league that feels very like you. the Big Ten and the SEC, you feel like you have an idea who might win the league, and then there's, you know, the other teams. The Big 12, I mean, the team right now could be eighth or ninth on paper, and in a couple of weeks, you know, we could be using tiebreaker procedures to figure out, is Arizona going to the – is West Virginia undefeated in conference play in the Big 12? I mean, Neil Brown, who was – seemingly
on one of the hottest seats there was.
Yeah, it was minutes to midnight for Neil Brown, and instead, maybe West Virginia is the team that's going to be making some playoff noise in that conference. So no, that's Iowa State, West Virginia tomorrow night on Fox. By the way, another really interesting matchup in the Big 12.
Yeah, I mean.
Kansas State.
They may not sound that sexy, but I mean these are some big ball games.
Kansas State's at Colorado tomorrow night. Like that's the night game on ESPN. So I mean we talk more SEC. We talk more Big Ten.
SEC and Big Ten get more of the headlines.
But this is a week where between Utah and Arizona State playing tonight, Arizona playing at undefeated BYU. BYU would probably be the favorite right now. Like if you ask people like who looks like the most legitimate team in that league, it would either be BYU or it would be Iowa State. And BYU's hosting Arizona tomorrow on Fox. That's a day game. Mm-hmm. Iowa State is at West Virginia on Fox. That's the night game. And then Kansas State, Colorado, that is your Pac-12 Memorial game, 9:15 local, 9:15 Central. By the way, Kansas State's a Central Time Zone team.
Yeah, they are,
and they're playing at 9:15 tomorrow night at Colorado to accommodate some TV scheduling there. But that's going to be that's going to be a good one too.
I'm looking for interesting games in the ACC. Well, Cal's at Pitt.
Third East Coast trip for the Cal Bears this year. They've already been to Auburn and Florida State. Beat Auburn.
And they're 1-1 in those games.
And really came very close to beating Florida State. Yep. Like they were, you know, they missed a couple field goals in the fourth quarter. They have a goal line stand turned away. They only lose that game by five. Look, Cal probably should have beaten Florida State. Probably should have beaten Miami.
They should have beaten Miami.
Let that one slip away,
man,
too.
That's no question. Blew a 35-10 lead.
Hate it for the Bears. This sport would be more fun right now if Cal was 5-0. Instead, they're 3-2. If Cal Pitt was a matchup of 5-0.
Yeah.
5-0 teams. Instead, Cal goes there and we'll see what I mean. Pitt or Indiana would be your most under the radar undefeated major conference team.
How many of these undefeated teams do you think will, you know, how long can it last? Because you've got a few that you go, oh, they're undefeated? They're unbeaten. I mean, you mentioned Iowa State a little while ago.
I don't think Pitt's undefeated run is going to last past Clemson.
Probably.
Let me
not.
Just say, like, no. And I know they've still got SMU too. I know Pitt's got SMU coming up pretty soon. 5-1 SMU, making a little bit of noise in the ACC. Rhett Lashley, the coach there for the Mustangs. But that's I think Cal's got a shot of beating Pitt this weekend. I don't know exactly how good Pitt is. Although Pitt did beat that West Virginia team that we were talking about a little bit earlier. But I would think that SMU and Clemson are probably ample opportunities to burst Pitt's bubble. If Pitt's still undefeated coming out of Clemson, you know, if they're 8-0, 9-0 with wins over SMU and Clemson, then suddenly you take Pitt a little bit more seriously as a title contender.
Yeah, I mean, who do you really believe in the ACC? I mean, Miami continues to win. Like we said, they probably shouldn't have, but I mean,
I think Clemson's the best team.
Clemson is the scariest team right now. I think.
Even though Miami's undefeated, I would probably say Clemson looks like the scariest team. SMU is good. SMU has some players, so I would think that's also a team. And, I mean, I've seen Louisville play good football this year. I don't know exactly.
Yeah,
I don't know exactly what to make.
Last time out,
yeah, I don't know exactly what to make of Louisville. I mean, they seem to be they look to be better earlier in the season. They've still got Miami and Clemson and Pitt on the schedule. So Louisville has a chance to play their way back into this.
No, oh, the boss is.
Yeah, I think I know. Yeah, who I think I know. Who Steve Witten's going to root for.
All right, we're about ready for a break. We'll go ahead and get to that final one of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Friday Drive.
The results are in, and Game Day Men's Health in Auburn has
the... The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final segment of the show here and of the week. Here on this Friday afternoon. Again, we've got quite a few things coming up for you over on Wings 94.3. It's Auburn High and Smith Station, 6:30 for the pregame, 7 o'clock kickoff from the Duck. Meanwhile, Lee Scott and Wadley, also same times, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock kick on AU 100. And as we've mentioned a few times, we will have the deciding Game 5 of the National League Division Series tonight between the Dodgers and the Padres.
We haven't talked nearly as much Auburn football or Auburn sports as we normally do on a Drive episode. And part of that's because Auburn is off tomorrow, and it's an opportunity.
That's a large part of that.
To talk. Yeah. No, and part, but it also, I mean, tonight feels like a, I mean, it's a heavyweight title fight sort of feeling. Like, this is a big fight. Dodgers-Padres game.
The winner here is going to be your favorite for the in the National League Championship Series. Yeah. And I feel like the Dodgers should be the favorite tonight since they're back at home. And they've got a couple of guys on full rest where the Padres went with Dylan Cease last night. They've got Yu Darvish. I don't know who else they go too long right now. Like we were talking about with the Dodgers, could go with Flaherty if Yamamoto gets in trouble.
Do we have I would think we have lineups for both teams with the game just about an hour and a half away. Freddie Freeman is in the lineup for the Dodgers tonight. Freeman, there was question of whether or not Freddie could go after hurting his ankle late in the season. Missed game four. With Max Muncy playing first base instead, but the Dodgers do have Freddie batting third, playing first tonight with Muncy back at third. Bottom third of the Dodgers lineup, which has helped them in a couple of these games, Bill. Kike, who, by the way, would you believe, of everyone in this postseason, is it everyone in the postseason or everyone like the most postseason homers, maybe of everyone on the Dodgers, maybe of the current Dodgers roster, the player with the most postseason home runs is Kike Hernandez, Mookie, which would be something surprising.
Yeah, no kidding, because they've been in postseason quite a bit,
and so was he, and so and not Muncy for that matter. Somebody else who's been in the postseason a lot, but Kike, he's in center field. Gavin Lux at second base, Tommy Edman at shortstop for the Dodgers, Shohei, Mookie, and Freddie. By the way, have you ever seen, I've never seen in baseball, it ever, watching a baseball postseason game where they're advertising mid at bat or during someone's at bat, they're saying, hey, don't go anywhere, Shohei Ohtani's batting in three guys, or Shohei Ohtani is four hitters away, or think like the way Fox has promoted hey, Shohei's only two. Like they'll show him when he's in the hole. Like they'll not show, but they will put up a graphic, like it indicate. Like hey, you know, just for this. Like it's a special treatment that has to be related to how many eyeballs.
Oh no, no question.
Are watching this when he's at bat or when he's about to be at bat and
he's had an okay series. He's hitting .250 in the series. The thing that's been shocking to me is how the Dodgers have shut down Luis Arraez. I mean, he is the best hitter. I just think he's the best pure hitter in baseball. I mean, anybody who wins three straight batting titles with three different teams, it hasn't mattered. But here in the postseason, he's gotten under the ball. He's hit more pop-ups and something that you don't usually see him do.
I would be sad if the season ended tonight, Bill, for the Dodgers. I would be extremely disappointed if tonight were Teoscar's last game in a Dodgers uniform, because he's a one-year deal guy, impending free
agent. He'd love to stay there.
He'd love to stay. He's been a big part of the second half of this team.
Leading the Dodgers in RBIs in the series.
And had the grand slam that made game three interesting. And he's hitting cleanup tonight for the Dodgers and in left field. So, yeah, I think it would be – I hope he gets extended, but I also hope he gets to keep playing for the Dodgers this postseason.
Yep. Meanwhile, you talked about it a little while ago. Fernando Tatis had an outstanding series, and he's a guy. It's been, I think, fortunate, key that they've kept a rise off the base. Tatis has done a lot of damage, but he hasn't had that guy on base ahead of him. So, yeah, that'll be coming up tonight. 6:30 is the pregame, and 7 o'clock, a little after 7 o'clock, first pitch.
Just imagine, though, too. I mean, this
is... And it is the first, it is indeed the first ever postseason matchup in Major League Baseball history between two Japanese-born pitchers.
And I know why they felt like they needed to do it, but, I mean, this Padres lineup could have Soto. Like, it's also, like, keeping, yeah. like Juan Soto could be in this Padres lineup.
Well, things were so disappointing for him last year, they decided to see, you know, how much they could get for him.
And maybe the prospects they got in the Soto deal could really help them in the next couple of years. But this is, you know, I've heard about how this is a Padres team because their TV deals are a little bit wonky and stuff. Like, this is a team that actually needs
Had him, would Jackson Merrill have gotten the opportunity? Jerickson Profar wouldn't have been signed.
Profar
just wouldn't have been signed. Yeah. Remember, because he was just sort of an afterthought.
What do you do with a Soto, Tatis, Machado middle lineup and a
Rise? They had it last year.
Yeah, they did.
They didn't have a Rise, though.
And they didn't have it in the postseason last year. But, you know, I mean, Tatis is playing extremely well and would be – he was getting to the point where I would consider putting him on. You know what I mean? Like, he was making that kind of impact.
Well, sort of the way Shohei was down the stretch.
So I think how the Dodgers decide to attack Tatis, big part of deciding who is going to win tonight's game, which you can hear on ESPN 106.7.
Yep. So it should be a fun weekend. Enjoy the weekend, everybody, with Auburn. You know, having the weekend off, watch the other ball games, and I'm sure there will be a shocker or two, and we'll talk about that with you and have Brian Matthews with us when we come back for the Monday show. But that's going to wrap things up for the Friday edition of The Drive. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.